We now begin the second perek of Maseches Orla. It's a fantastic perek, 17 Mishnayos, which makes it essentially the longest perek in the whole Shas, outside of the long perekim in Pirkei Avos. And in truth, to be fair, there are two perekim of 17 Mishnayos each in Maseches Kelim. But it's big, it's big. And the topic here is the topic of ta'arovis, of mixtures, which means that Maseches Orla, perek Beis, should be the starting point for any serious aspiring rabbinic student who's studying Yora, who's learning the laws of Kasha, so to speak, etc. We're talking here about mixtures. And a tarovis is a mixture, from the word ayin, resh, beis, erev, or mu'urav, to be mixed together. And it doesn't actually refer specifically to mixtures of food. Food will be our topic for this perek, and in truth, most of the time, tarovis is really focused on whether you can or cannot eat a mixture that contains foodstuffs, part of which is permitted food, heter, and part of which is forbidden, isser, forbidden foods. So, let's start at the very beginning. When the Torah forbids the eating of certain foods, whether it's pork, crustaceans, truma, miser, sheni, etc., all the restricted foodstuffs, the prohibition is against eating that food, and we have a tradition that to be a bona fide act of eating, such that one is liable to the penalties, let's say, of malchus, which is typically the case when it comes to eating most forbidden foods, let's say pork chops, etc., one has to eat a full kazayas, an olives amount, in the amount of time it takes to eat a half loaf of bread that was standard size in the time of the Mishnah, called a pras. So it's called kadei achilas pras, in the amount of time it takes to eat this pras, this half loaf of bread. An olive's volume is something like around 30 cc, 30 cubic centimeters, or about one fluid ounce. And the amount of time it takes to eat that pras, loaf of bread, is around 4 minutes, but there's a big range of opinions from as little as 2 minutes to as long as 9 minutes. In any case, that means that for one to be liable to having transgressed a prohibition of eating, one would have to eat, let's say, that 30 cc in somewhere between 2 and 9 minutes. When you're going strictly, like for example, if you're eating on Yom Kippur because you have to, but you're in this borderline case where if you eat a little bit at a time, you'll be okay, then you'll hear one should eat that amount of food each time, spacing out that kazayas of food, less than a kazayas of food, to be more than 9 minutes apart. And if you're being strict, like for example, you're eating your kazayas of matzah on Pesach, you don't want to compress it to as short as possible, approaching that 2 minute range. In any case, for one to be liable, again, for lashes or whatever the punishment is, he has to eat that kazayas of olives amount of food in that kadei achilas pras, in that, say, 4 minutes time frame. Now, if one doesn't meet those two requirements, so then his act of eating is not considered to be a bona fide act of eating. It's something less than that. So if one, let's say, eats either half of a kazayas of food, or let's say he even eats one whole kazayas, but he eats it over the span of 10 minutes, so then he hasn't met the requirements, and he won't be subject to whatever the consequences in the Bez Din Shalmata down here on planet Earth might be for that eating that food. The question, first of all, the Gemara considers is the Torah even prohibiting an act of eating that is less than that, meaning does that even count as eating? You know, that actually is a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish, and the Gemara, the Amoraim. But we posken like Rabbi Yochanan that a, quote, chatzi shiur, which literally means a partial quantity, meaning eating less than the full kazayas or eating it in more than the time of achilas pras, is still forbidden from the Torah, meaning if one eats on Yom Kippur in any amount, he certainly is breaking the Torah, just not subject to the consequences of eating Yom Kippur. And same goes if one eats a tiny, teeny, tiny taste of bacon, he's certainly violating the Torah. It's not just rabbinic, but there would be no physical consequences meted out here on planet Earth for eating less than one kazayas, it's just a tiny taste of the bacon, even though one is breaking the Torah. So that means you can't eat even little bits of isser. It's prohibited. And nevertheless, we'll have the overriding principle here of a tarovis, which means if you're eating a pure piece of isser, it's forbidden from the Torah. But if you have a small bit of forbidden substance that's mixed up with other permitted substances, so there's an overriding rule called bittul, which means that's something like annulment, where we will say that under certain circumstances, the identity of the whole mixture gets a single halachic status, and it will go after the majority of the constituents of that mixture. So that's that rule is called bittul barov, annulment in the majority, and it's based on the Torah's pasuk, which says achrei rabim lahatos, that you will tend towards or lean towards or go towards the majority, which is understood to apply here, according to the tradition, that if you have a tarovus, you have a mixture, and that means that you've got iser and heter combined, and those prohibited and permitted foodstuffs that are combined, if we're talking about food, are combined in such a way that you can't identify the iser anymore. It's lost in the mix. You can't pull it out. So then the whole status of that mixture will, under normal circumstances or many circumstances from the Torah, be decided simply on what is the majority of the mixture. So that means, just for example, if you have two kosher jelly beans and a third jelly bean gets mixed up with them, which is indistinguishable from them, but that third jelly bean is made from not kosher gelatin. So you have two kosher jelly beans and one non-kosher jelly bean, and they're, you know, you don't know which is which. So you have three jelly beans on the plate. So that mixture now is a tarovis. You can't pick out which is the not kosher one, and the jelly beans are now permitted for consumption. You could take one of the jelly beans and eat them, no problem. There is a question if one person could eat all three jelly beans, since we know that somewhere in there is a prohibited jelly bean, and the Rama for Ashkenazim certainly says you may not. You should really avoid eating all of the mixture to yourself, since then you know you're eating Isra somewhere. But putting that aside, the point is that you have a simple mixture here. We go after row, we go after the majority, and those jelly beans are permitted. Same would go with if you have three chicken legs and one of the chickens came from not proper lishechta chicken, etc. Okay, now that may be the only rule that governs the halachas of tarovus from the Torah. There is, however, a second possible issue, and that is the issue of what's called tam, of taste. So that means when you have the jelly bean example I told you before, each jelly bean is totally discrete. That is to say, when you eat one jelly bean, you're only eating that particular jelly bean, and it may indeed have originally been the treif one, but certainly if it's the kosher one, there's no portion, part, semblance, vestige, you know, or taste, for that matter, which is what we're talking about here, of the not kosher jelly bean with it. So if, for example, you have a cholent, you're making a vegetarian cholent, and in falls the pork chop, so you'll be required to pull the pork chop out. But even after you pull the pork chop out, there is very possibly going to be the taste of pork still inside the cholent. The question is, does that make the cholent forbidden? Or now, since you've pulled the pork chop out, and therefore for sure the majority is kosher cholent, it's potatoes and barley, and not there's no piece of meat cholent in the cholent at all anymore. So is the mixture of the cholent permitted? Min haTorah, from the Torah. So that depends upon the question of ta'am ke'ikr. Do we say that if the taste is still present, do we consider it as if the actual pork is still here? The pork molecules are obviously giving flavor and they're present, and therefore you can't say that the pork can be totally disregarded. So if that's the case, if we do say that tam ke'ikr, that if you can taste it, it's like it's really here, is a Torah prohibition, then it may well be that even if you've taken the pork chop out, the cholent entirely has become forbidden. Whether or not tam ke'ikr is the case midoraisa from the Torah is actually a machlokus rishonim with a number of shitas. On the one extreme is Rashi, who says absolutely not. That it's only rabbinic in nature. You're just concerned with rabbinic factors. If you can just taste it, and we simply go after majority. If the majority is kosher, the whole mixture is kosher min haTorah, and we don't care about taste. The taste issue is simply rabbinic. At the other extreme is Rabbeinu Tam, who holds absolutely that tam ke'ikr. If you can taste it, it's like it's here. And that being the case, an example I gave you before, if you have a pork chop falls into your cholent, if you pull it out, you can still taste the pork in the mix. So then Rabbeinu Tam would hold that the whole cholent is aser now min haTorah, from the Torah, and even if you eat one kazayas of potato and bean, which means you're certainly not eating a kazayas of pork, because part of what you're eating is potato and bean, still, you'd be fully liable in Minhag Torah to malchus, whatever the story is. That would be the case in the case of a pork chop. We Ashkenazim go with Rabbeinu Tam, meaning we treat Tam ke'ikar as a Torah prohibition. Okay, there are actually a number of shitas in the middle between Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi. I'm not going to that now here. But lahalacha, Ashkenazim certainly say Tam ke'ikar, we go with Rabbeinu Tam, and that means if you have Rabbeinu Tam has no relationship to the word Tam, by the way. Tam, anyways, no, not connected at all. But we go with Rabbeinu Tam, the Tosfos, and we treat Tam ke'ikar, which means that in practice there are actually two Torah considerations when you're having a tarov. It's a mixture to consider whether this mixture is permitted or forbidden from the Torah. One is rov. Do you have a majority of heter here, a permitted substance? And even if you do, do you have tam? If you have taste, then it still remains prohibited from the Torah. Okay, now that's the backstory. When it comes to mixture tarovas, across the board, there are two factors to consider that the Torahs consider in terms of types of mixtures. Okay, one type of mixture is called a min b'mino mixture. That is when you have the iser and heter have essentially the same name. So we're talking, let's say, jelly beans and jelly beans. If you have the kosher and not kosher jelly beans mixed up, it's called a min b'mino mixture, one type in its same type, because of jelly beans mixing with jelly beans. They're all jelly beans. Okay, the other type of mixture is called a min b'she'eno mino, a mixture that contains heter of one type and iser of a different type, meaning they have different names. So, for example, pork chops and cholent. Okay, so that's a min b'she'eno mixture. The other dimension to consider in mixtures is whether a mixture is called a yavesh b'yavesh mixture, which literally means dry with dry together. And the other option, other kinds of mixture, is called lach balach, a moist wet thing with another moist or wet thing. But the actual truth is we're not talking about dry and wet per se. The case of the jelly beans is certainly a yavish b'yavish mixture, because each jelly bean is discrete and dry and doesn't commingle. But lach balach, what it really means, well, it literally means wet into wet, it means that in every sample of iser, whenever you pull some of the mix out, you will have some of the iser in it. So that certainly, if you're talking about liquids, you know, as you have your soup, and inside the soup fell some of your truma wine. So of course, since wine is a liquid and soup is a liquid, they will get mixed up pretty quickly. And any teaspoon that you take of the whole soup of the tarovas, the mixture, will contain some forbidden wine. So that's your classic lach balach. In contrast, back to the yavish b'yavish case, if you take jelly beans, certainly when you take any particular jelly bean, you're not taking the other itzer jelly beans with it necessarily. So that's why it's called yavish b'yavish. But just to illustrate the point, why it's not strictly like about wet and dry, let's say just hypothetically you have flour. You have chadash flour from the new crop, which is forbidden to be eaten until after the second day of Pesach. And you have yashan, you have old flour from last season, which is permitted now. So if those two flours mix together, so you have a tarovas here, that would be a min b'mino mixture, because it's flour and flour. But according to most, and we should stick to that, we'll understand that that mixture is actually called a lach balach mixture, because the flour essentially operates, if you will, as a liquid, in as much as when they're thoroughly blended together, every scoop, every taste, every sample of the flour mix will include both iser and heter, forbidden and permitted flour. So that's like a lach balach mixture, even though it's dry. So don't get bogged down with the literal translation of the words, but in general it means yavish b'yavish, discrete pieces and discrete samples when you pull it out, and lach balach means that iser and heter is commingled essentially in every spoon. Okay. So those two dimensions, min b'mino or min b'she'eno mino, on the one side, and lach b'lach or yavish b'yavish on the other side, means you have essentially four basic types of mixtures. Like make a grid, a 2x2 grid, and you can set it up. So on the one hand, the simple case of a min b'mino yavish b'yavish mixture, so that's the jelly bean case, right? It's same name. Oh, sorry, I got ahead of myself. Let me say one more important thing. There is a fascinating discussion in the Gemara about a min-bamino mixture. If you have two of the same substance, let's say wine and wine, or flour and flour, and some is iser and some is heter, some is permitted, some forbidden, there is a question of whether there is such a thing as bittul at all, if you can actually have annulments of the iser and the heter. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, who la halacha, we do not follow, but it's not so simple, but that's the bottom line, there's no such thing as bittul in a min bimino mixture at all, which is remarkable. And just understand why. Because when we're saying something is batel, that it's annulled, what we mean is that its presence in the mixture is no longer significant. It's lost in the mix. It's lost identity. But if you have wine mixing with more wine, or flour mixing with more flour, so you could argue there's sort of like strength in numbers, that the flour found more of its, more flour, and now it's, there's not less flour, so to speak, but more flour. There's no loss, the flour has not disappeared. Or jelly beans with more jelly beans, etc. You can't say jelly beans are gone because they're here with, they're finding sort of strength in numbers. And that's Rabbi Yehuda Shita. Remarkably, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish disagree, but Rav and Shmuel actually agree with him. And that means even the Rishonim are split, although if there is such a thing as bittul at all when it comes to a min bamino mixture, which is remarkable. But in any case, we certainly paskin in the end that there is bittul in min bamino. And that being the case, so if you have the jelly beans, you have kosher and jelly beans mixed together, since there's no issue of ta'am, you'll have a case simply of a min bamino mixture. It's yavish by yavish, meaning the taste not spreading. Each one's discrete. And that being the case, you don't have a tam question. You only have the rov question. As long as you have a majority of kosher jelly beans, the mixture is permitted. Minotaur and midrabanan. On the other extreme, you have the possibility of a min b'she'eino mino mixing in a lach b'lach mixture, which means you have your chicken soup and infill that the pork chop, for that matter, even because the juices are the lach part, or if you pull that out, doesn't matter. If you have in your, you know, your not kosher wine spilling in or something, so leave one out. You have your not kosher, pig juice splashing in there. So then you have a min b'she'eino mixture, and it's lach b'lach. So then you have an issue of tam. There's taste. The question is, can you still taste that not kosher pig juice that's floating around in your chicken soup? Now, if you can, so then we say that the mixture remains asr min ha-Torah. Asr min d'oraisa, because ta'am ke'ikr. Now, in practice, how would you ever determine that? How would you ever know? You can't start sampling the chicken soup, which had pig juice falling in, because it's got pig juice falling in. How could you taste, see if it's, if you can taste it, you might be eating asr min d'oraisa. So the Torah says, therefore, that you, excuse me, the Gemara says, therefore, the ideal situation would be if you could find a kfela armai, a non-Jewish chef, to do the sampling for you. That's the Gemara comes out to determine tam. Non-Jewish because they don't have the prohibition against eating the iser, and a chef because you need to have a trained palate. You need to have someone who could actually really discern if you can still detect the taste of the forbidden substance in the permitted substance. Now, in practice, I'm sure you'll realize that it's pretty tricky to find a non-Jewish chef handy to chase chicken soup on Erev Shabbos. And more than that, there's a question even if you could you trust him to tell you the truth? Maybe since he knows it's a kosher issue to you, he'll spite you and tell you that he can't taste it, but really he could taste it. So there's a question of if it has to be mesiach lefi tumo, if he has to be speaking and telling you if he can taste the pork juice, not knowing the halachic consequences for you, etc. So therefore, the Gemara ends up coming out. The Chazal decided that, listen, for normal foods, generic, typical foods, we're not going to be able to taste it necessarily. And if we can't taste it, then we will just rely on the rule that you need shishim. That if you have 60 times, that's where the number 60 comes from, 60 times of heter against the iser, so then it's... The mixture becomes permitted because it's let's call it halachically safe to assume that the taste is no longer there. Now, there's another range of opinions in the Rishonim regarding, do you have to get a taste tester if you can, l'charchila? What happens if you can still taste it after 60 times? What if it's very bland and you couldn't taste it even much less than 60 times, etc.? So for Ashkenazim anyways, and this is just for Ashkenazim, the halach goes like Rabbeinu Tam again, who says that once Chazal said 60, they meant it, and that's the rule. And that means that if you could taste it after 60, hypothetically, for typical bland foods, that taste is halachically insignificant. And the rule is you need 60, period. 60 times again. So just want to make sure it's clear how that's measured. Let's say, for example, you had 59 cups of chicken soup in your pot and one cup of treif soup falls in, so you have a total of 60, that whole pot is for sure forbidden because you don't have 60 times against. 60 times against means you had 60 cups of chicken soup, kosher, and then one cup of not kosher liquid falls in. So you have 60 times of kosher against one time of not kosher, and that means the tarovus, the mixture, remains kosher. Since Rabbeinu Tam, and the halacha is the tam ke'ikar, that would mean that if you need 60 times of the kosher against the not kosher, or else the mixture is forbidden midda oraisa, not midda rabbanan. And that's talking about a lach balach mixture. You have a mixture of tastes, min b'shei nomino, when you have things that have disparate tastes, like chicken soup and some non-kosher liquid that falls in. Okay, so those are the two extremes. Min b'mino, same types, yavesh b'yavesh, if they're discrete, dry, so then you need simple majority. Min b'she'en amino, two different types of food with different names mixing together, lach b'lach, where there's a mixture of tastes, so then you'll need 60 times against midor raisa. Okay, that'd be like the pork chop and the chalent, etc. Pull out the pork chop, you still need 60 times against the volume of that pork chop, because we're concerned that the whole pork chop contained, all the flavor embedded in the pork chop has now been released into the chalent to the volume of that original pork chop. So again, if you have the pork chop removed, you need 60 times of chalent against the volume of the pork chop that fell in, notwithstanding the fact that it's removed because of tam. The other two extremes of min b'she'en nomino and yavesh b'yavesh. So you have, let's say, that's a strange case. Let's say you have a platter of different kinds of fruits, and it turns out like one of the fruits in the mix is not kosher one way or the other. So then that's a yavesh b'yavesh mixture, but it's min b'she'en nomino. And if you have a min b'mino lach b'lach, so you have two of the same types of liquids, and let's say, kosher apple juice and not kosher apple juice, however that be, let's say from a Shemitah tree or something. So then that's a lach b'lach, it's liquids mixing, but it's min b'mino, it's the same type, apple juice and apple juice. So there you need 60 times also, but both those are midur banan. So those two, the requirements for 60 times for the mixed fruits or the 60 times required for the mixed apple juices are both just midrabanan, because midoraisa, you have no issue of taste, right? In the case of the fruits, each fruit is discrete, they're not boiled together into a compote, let's say. Therefore you don't need midoraisa, there's no tam issue. But midrabanan, there is a requirements for 60 times because there's a fear that you could certainly cook them together. And if you cook them together to make that compote, now you need 60 times. Midoraisa. As far as the min b'mino, lach b'lach, the apple juice plus apple juice, it's liquid. There's not a taste issue because you certainly can't taste the treif apple juice because what you're tasting is apple juice. But since that could be mixed up easily with another, confused with another type of mixture, midrabanan, again, you need 60 times against. So again, summing up here, big picture. For mixtures, you have two dimensions to consider. Is it the same type, the same name, that's min b'mino or not? And second of all, is it yavesh b'yavesh or lach b'lach? Is there a commingling of the flavors into each and every sample? You will need a simple majority when it's a min b'mino yavesh b'yavesh, because there's no mixing of tastes. Therefore, you get a simple issue of needing rove, majority. And there'd be no issue of taste, even if you could boil and cook the two types of things together, because they have the same taste. And that being the case, simple majority is required, even midrabanan. you could eat one of those, you know, chicken wings off the plate, if it turns out one of the chickens were treif, or the jelly bean off the plate, etc. On the other side of the extreme, if you have a min b'she'enum, you know, different taste foods, different name foods that are lach b'lach, commingled together, you'll need 60 times midoraisa, because we hold that tam ke'ikar midoraisa, and 60 is the threshold. The other two types of mixtures, again, min b'mino lach b'lach, like, for example, two kinds of apple juices, or min b'she'enum mino yavish b'yavish, discrete mixtures, but they're of different types, like a platter of fruits. Those require 60 times midorabanan. Okay, so that's Tarovus in a nutshell. It took me a whole 25 minutes to say, but it was hopefully worth it. That's where things begin. Now, our Mishnah here will take up where that's left off, and it will start talking about now three types of foods where the rabbis upped the requirement from 60 to a higher number. Those types of foods are truma, orla, and kilai hakerem. Okay, truma, as you know from Seches Trumos, is the gift of the kohen, but actually can refer to one of four different types of foods. You can have good old-fashioned truma gadol, the first tithe that you give to the kohen. You could have trumas meiser, that is the 10% that comes from the 10% that was given to the levi, trumas meiser. You could also have chala, our previous mesechta, the dough that's given to the kohen, the 1/48th or 1/24th of the dough that's separated for the kohen. And you could have bikurim, your first fruits of the Shivat Haminim, the seven species that Israel is praised with. One takes some of his first fruits as they ripen to the Beis HaMikdash to be weighed and then given to a kohen. Those four things, truma gadola, trumas meiser, chala, and bikurim, are all called truma in the Torah. They're referred to as truma. They have the same name, truma, and they carry the basic same rules. And the rabbis said that 60 times against truma is insufficient. They want you to have 100 times against. Now, the base of that is it's purely rabbinic. There's an asmachta, that is to say, they found a pasuk on which, like, it's like a peg to hang this halacha on, but it's certainly not a doraisa. And the pasuk that they hang it on, this is important for understanding the rest of this Mishnah here, is a pasuk that's talking about Trumas Meiser. And it says, Mikol matnoseichem, tarumu es kol Trumas Hashem, Mikol chelbo es Mikdasho, you will. All your gifts, you'll separate a piece out of. This is talking about Trumas Meiser. From the Chelbo, the best part of it, as Mikdasho, the holy portion, Mimenu, from it. Now that Mimenu seems to be sort of superfluous. And based on that, they sort of have an Asmachta, they extended that if you had Trumas Meiser that fell back into the mix, the whole mix becomes forbidden until you pull it out. That's the Asmachta, based on that word Mimenu. Meaning, for example, if you have your at your granary, and for whatever reason you want to, you know, you're a chaver, you want everything to be perfectly good when you give it out to the various parties, so you're going to separate Trumas Meiser on behalf of the Levi to whom you'd be giving Meiser. So what happens is you have when you're about to separate your Meiser, you have 100 bushels of corn, of wheat over there. You'll take 10 bushels off, you'll call one of those 10 bushels Meiser, and then, although it's the responsibility of the Levi, if you do it for him, you'd say one of those 10 would be Trumas Meiser. So it's a tenth of a tenth, or 100th. Now, if for argument's sake, you lost track of where that Trumas Meiser bushel was, so now you have somewhere, you have 99 bushels of permitted substance, yes, nine of which are Meiser Rishon, Levi's gift, but that you could eat, it's not Isser, and so you have 99 of Heter and one bushel of Isser. It certainly is a Yavish, but you have a Shmin Bamino mixture. But put that aside for a moment. You've lost the identity of that one bushel. So if you would say that 60 times is sufficient, so then it would not be a problem. And that being the case, Trumas Meiser sort of all of a sudden would never become a problem, because you could always just say wherever the Trumas Meiser is, who cares? It's a bottle and Shishim. So the rabbi said, no way. They said, if your Trumas Meiser gets mixed back in, the whole mixture becomes forbidden, so don't let it happen. Which means that you'll need to have more than 99 times of heter against one part of truma for the mixture to become permitted. So the way that the Mishnah always refers to that is you need 100 times of heter against one iser, 100 times of the permitted food against the one unit of truma, because that truma's meiser. It's starting on truma's meiser, but it will apply to all trumas, meaning truma gadola also needs 100 times, as does challah, as does bikurim. As a side point, but an important point, it's actually a machlokas back in Trumos. If you need just more than 99 times, that's Rabbi Yehoshua's shita, or you need a full 100 times against the one. Remember, even 99 and a bit would not be present in your typical Trumos Meister situation, which got remixed in. The halacha is actually like Rabbi Yehoshua, meaning you only need 99 times and a bit against one, meaning a whole mixture of 100 and a bit, including one unit of Trumos Meister, would be permitted. Less than that would be called meduma, it's a forbidden mixture of truma. But even though the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua, the Mishnayos are always phrased like Rabbi Eliezer Shita, they need a full 100 times of heter against the one unit of truma, so it'll refer to it as like 101 in the mixture in total. Okay, so that's truma, which again applies to those four kinds of truma. Then you have orla and kilai hakerem. Now they're we're already in Durabanan territory, but there is a connection between Kilai HaKerem and Truma. There's a pasuk that connects the two of those things, like a Gezer Shava. And that being the case, we will learn that the rabbis will learn, Midurabanan, that this we're going to set up the standards of a Kilai HaKerem to be certainly no less than those of Truma. But 100 times won't even be enough for Kilai HaKerem, because Kilai HaKerem, like Orla, is not just forbidden to be eaten, but Kilai HaKerem and Orla are forbidden, they're Asr Bahana, you're forbidden to get any benefit at all from them. And that being the case, the rabbi said, this is the Yerushalmi, says basically, since the Torah, so to speak, doubled the Isser, it said, don't just eat it, but also don't get benefit from it. So the rabbis doubled the ratio, not just 100 times, but 200 times against. So when it comes to Orla and Kilai HaKerem, the mixture will be forbidden if it contains anything less than 200 times heter against one unit of Kilai HaKerem or one unit of Orla. Just reminding you what Kilai HaKerem is. Kilai HaKerem is if you have a vineyard growing, or even sure there's even one grapevine, and beneath the in the vineyard, you have either grains, like wheat and barley, or you have greens, like, you know, vegetables, growing in that vineyard as a mixed species. So then you've violated the Kilai HaKerem rule, and those vines in the vineyard, as well as, like, say, the wheat and barley growing in the vineyard, all has to be destroyed. Asr Bahana has to be burned. Pentiktosh. So that being the case, If you have Orla or Kilai HaKerem, it's Asr Bahana, and if you have it fall into a mixture, you need 200 times against. Okay, so with that, now the Mishnah begins, quite an introduction, I'm sorry, but that's how it goes here, Baruch Hashem. The Mishnah begins by saying, HaTruma, when it comes to Truma, Utrumas Meiser, the gears we have is Trumas Meiser Shel Damai, which means Trumas Meiser that came from Damai, that's, I'll call it Suffolk. Trumas Meiser, there are yourselves that have a Trumas Meiser proper. There's a discussion here, but putting that, I just want to put that issue aside. If it's just Trumas Meister Shel Damai, as one shot will be, sort of speaking, and Kol Shekin, regular Trumas Meister, which is Vadai, certain Trumas Meister, and Hachala, and Chala Do, and Habikurim, the first fruits, all of those are categorized as Truma by the Torah, and therefore we'll have three halachas that apply to those four types of Truma. The first halacha is that Olim, that it becomes batel, meaning it becomes the mixture that contains these forbidden foods becomes permitted be'echad u'mea, in 101, which means you need to have a mixture that contains 101 units, one unit of the forbidden truma, meaning truma gedola, trumas meiser of even of damai, which is like perhaps the rabbanan, chala or bikurim. That one unit has to be mixed up with 100 units of heter for the whole mixture of 101 to be permitted to a non-kohen. Anything less than that would be a meduma mixture, which means only a kohen could eat the entire mixture. You have to give it to the kohen. You could sell it to the kohen, perhaps, for the value of what isn't his. But fine, it's usher for a zar from a non-kohen. That's the first rule, 101, Chiddush. Second rule is umitztarfen ze im ze. They combine, which means that if you have some truma gadol and some trumas meiser, or some bikurim and some challah, let's say, getting mixed together, so they combine. You need to have 100 times against the combined amount of truma, even if it's comprises two different types of truma. Mitztarfen, they combine. And third of all, v'tzarech laharim, once you have such a mixture, you have your 100 units of heter and 1 unit of truma falls in, and we say that the mixture now is permitted, but a special rule when it comes to truma mixtures is you'll still need to pull out 1 unit, the amount that fell in, and give that to a kohen. You have to pull 1 unit out. That's laharim, to lift it up and separate it, like the word truma actually, connected. And the reason why is because when it comes to truma specifically, you have still a financial obligation to the kohen. It's his food that's falling in. You have to pay it back to him, if you will. Or if you haven't given it to any kohen, it's still momon hoshevet that belongs to the kohanim collectively, and you have to give it to one kohen. You owe the kohen the one bushel of wheat that got mixed in, so you'll have to pull it out, okay, and give it to him. That's unique to truma. The Mishnah now continues on to talk about Orla and Kilai HaKerem. So we'll have three sheets this year. The Tanakhama is going to hold that Orla and Kilai HaKerem, first of all, Olim Be'echru Matayim, everyone agrees this part, that you need to have 201 units total, meaning 1 unit of Orla, or 1 unit of Kilai HaKerem, that gets mixed in with 200 units of Heter, for this whole thing to be a problem. Second of all, they say umitzdarfim ze im ze. Fairly remarkably, they're going to combine, which means if you had half a unit of Orla and half a unit of Kilai HaKerem, which total 1 unit, and they fall into a mixture, let's say, of 100 of Chulin, you'll say the whole mixture is forbidden because you don't have 200 times against. Even though you do have 200 times against the Orla component, because 100 is 200 times more than a half. And you do have 200 times more than the Kilai HaKerem component. But they are mitzdaref, they combine, and since you don't have 200 times against the combined Isser, the whole mixture becomes forbidden. The reason for that is, even though they don't necessarily have the same name, one is Orla, one category of Isser, and one is Kilai HaKerem, a different category of Isser, if they fall in at the same time, so since the Torah refers to, according to this Tana, according to Rabbi Meir, this the Tana Kama here, since the Torah refers to forbidden foods in general, as it's saying, lo tochel kol tueva, you shouldn't eat any disgusting food, meaning like forbidden, halachli forbidden food, the Torah calls it all tueva, and disgusting, by the same name, and therefore we'll treat them as together, as to be mitzaref, to combine, if they fall in all at once, says the Tana Kama. And third of all, the ein tzarich laharim, there's no requirement, says the Tanakhama, to remove, if you do have 200 times against, so the whole mixture of 201 can all be eaten, no need to take anything out, because you don't owe any of that Orla or Kilai HaKerem to anybody in particular. Okay, now, the case here that we just said is applying, this is important to keep in mind across the board here. When it came, the whole basis of these unique extra requirements of 60 not being enough started out with Truma, because of Truma's Meiser falling back in and getting mixed up, we raise it to 100 times. Now, and we had a smach that the Rabban based their halacha based on that verse, the Memenu, the removing, has to be removed from the mix entirely if it fell back in. Since Truma's Meiser falling back into its mix could be even one part to 99, so we say you need more than that. You need one part to more than 99 for a mixture to be permitted. But Truma falling into getting remixed up back in with the original, if it's bushels of wheat, so to speak, that will always be a min bamino mixture. We're talking about you separated the Truma's Meiser and then it got mixed up with the stuff that it was being separated from. Let's say it was wine or oil or wheat, it doesn't matter, but it's being mixed up back in with the same thing. And that being the case, the rule will be that when we talk about needing 100 or 200 times when it comes to Truma, 100 times, or since we learned this Gezer Shava of Malaya, it's called from the word Malaya, it applies to both Kilai HaKerem being Aser and and Trumas Meiser being Aser, so any 200 times against for Kilai HaKerem, it'll only apply to min b'mino mixtures. The rabbis never said you needed 200 or 100 times for a min b'she'en amino. That's not resemblance of the Trumas Meiser falling back in. And in those scenarios, essentially, you just need 60. Okay, you need tam. You need as long as you can't taste the forbidden Truma or Orla or Kilai HaKerem. Okay, but now, this Tana held that if the combination of Orla and Kilai HaKerem fall in, you'll need 200 times against the combined amount, Mitzdarfim. To that, and he based on the fact that the Torah calls forbidden foods in general Toeva, and you'll call it all, like, he looks at it as, so to speak, the same type, meaning Isser is Isser, it's all Toeva, it's all halachically disgusting, and that applies equally to Orla as it does to Kilai HaKerem. Rabbi Shimon disagrees. Rabbi Shimon says, no, Orla and Kilai HaKerem are two different things. They're two different names. There's no reason in the world why they should combine. And that being the case, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Einan Mitzdarfen. They don't combine, which means if you have one cup of grape juice and half the cup is... let me take that again. You have one pint. A pint is two cups, for the record. You have one pint of grape juice. Half of the pint is Orla, and half of the pint is Kilai HaKerem. And it falls into 100 pints of kosher grape juice. So, that's the equivalent of saying one cup of Orla and one cup of Kilai HaKerem combined, falling into 200 cups of grape juice. And that being the case, says Rabbi Shimon, since they're not mitzdaref, they don't combine, you have one cup of Orla against 200 cups of chulin, which makes it permitted, and you have one cup of Kilai HaKerem against 200 cups of chulin, which makes it permitted, and therefore Rabbi Shimon would hold in that scenario where you have one pint, half of which is Orla and half of which is Kilai HaKerem, falling into 100 pints of chulin, the mixture is permitted because they're not mitzdaref, they don't combine. He rejects the Tanakama's approach that they're both toev and do combine. That's Rabbi Shimon's approach. The third opinion is Rabbi Eliezer. Now, he differentiates. He, in principle, agrees with Rabbi Shimon, saying that they're not mitzdaref and they wouldn't combine, meaning in a min b'mino mixture, when you have a mixture, you need 200 times against each one independently. You don't combine the two, says Rabbi Eliezer, just like Rabbi Shimon. However, there's a separate issue. That's the issue of tam. Outside of the quantity required, there's a separate issue of taste. So in a min b'she'eno mixture, in a mixture where you have, let's say, for example, a combination of Orla and Kilai HaKerem grape juice falling into the cholent. So that's min b'she'eno mino. We don't need the 200 times here because, again, you recall it was built on the Truma precedent, which you need 100 times only in min b'mino, so too by Orla and Kilai HaKerem. You only need 200 times in the case of min b'mino when you have grape juice falling back into grape juice. But if you have grape juice falling into cholent, so there, besides the issue of the two different kinds of Isser, Orla and Kilai HaKerem combining for the requisite amounts, which would now be, remember, different in the case of min b'she'en amino. You only need 60 times against because you're looking for taste. So he says, listen, if you have grape juice, even if half the grape juice is Orla and half the grape juice is Kilai HaKerem, if that grape juice is falling into the cholent, then the taste of grape juice is certainly combined. And if you have less than 60 times cholent against the grape juice, you will taste the grape juice. All the grape juice is Isser, and it's a tam of Isser. And that being the case, says Rabbi Eliezer, the mixture, meaning the cholent, it's a min b'she'en amino. You don't need 200 times, but you certainly need to have no remnant of taste of Isser. And since the taste is the same when it comes to Orla and Kilai HaKerem, if they are, so they would be mitzdaref, they would combine in terms of taste, not in terms of quantity. So therefore, again, Rabbi Eliezer agrees with Rabbi Shimon that they don't combine under normal circumstances, but Rabbi Shimon would say even when it comes to tam, they don't combine. I mean, Rabbi Shimon would say that if you have, even if you can taste the grape juice, since you're only tasting, you're not tasting a taste of Orla or a taste of Kilah HaKerem, if both are less than 60, they don't combine. Rabbi Eliezer says they do combine as far as taste is concerned. And that's what he says here. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Mitzdarfin Benosin Tam, when it comes to the contribution of taste to the mixture, that you can taste the Isser as a combination of Kilah HaKerem and Orla, it is a problem. They do combine. Avalo Le'esor, but they don't combine in the more generic requirements of 200 times in a min bamino mixture. Each one could be considered separately. And if you have 200 against of chulin against the orla components, it's mutter as long as you have 200 times also against the kilai karam component. The halacha is going to follow the Tana Kama, which would mean la halacha. We say that orla and kilai karam are mitzaref. They do combine if they fall in all at once. So if you have the case I said before, the cup, half the cup of orla and half of kilai karam that falls into the mixture of other wine, you'd need to have a total of 200 units of heter wine against that one cup that combines together of orla and kilai karam. That's the halacha lemaisa, but in Mishnah base we will see that only applies if it falls in all at once. Orla perik base Mishnah base 2-2. This Mishnah picks up where the previous left off and actually contrasts the fasting halacha. In the previous Mishnah we said that if you have two types of iser that fall in simultaneously into heter, so then they combine to forbid the mixture. Which means, for example, if you have, let's say, a pint container, and the pint contains two cups. So you have a pint container, half of which, meaning one cup, is orla grape juice, and half the pint, meaning another cup, is kilai karam grape juice. So that single pint of iser, with two different types of iser, pours into, let's say, 100 pints of regular chulin heter grape juice. So you might have thought, according to the Tana Kama, who the halacha follows, you might have thought, listen, you have in the 100 pints of chulin, you have 200 cups of regular chulin grape juice. It's the same thing. So you have 200 chulin against the one cup of orla, so that should annul the orla, and you have 200 pints against the one cup of kilai hakerem, so that should also annul the kilai hakerem, and therefore the mixture should be permitted. The Tana Kama held that no, it is not, because you combine the two types of isurim, the kilai hakerem and orla cups, in that pint that fell in, to be categorized together as isur, and therefore they combine to make the whole mixture forbidden, since you have one pint of orla slash kilai hakerem falling into 100 pints of chulin, and you need 200 times, so it's insufficient. We saw over there that Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Elazar disagreed and said that they couldn't combine, but we will go with the Tana Kama here to worry about the Mishnah going forward, because the halacha follows Tana Kama and the Mishnah will continue in that vein. And it will say that the reason why the Tana Kama they do combine is because, although they have different names, one is Orla, one is Kilai HaKerem, they are all categorized generally as Isser. They're called To'eva, things that are halachically disgusting. And since the pasuk is lo sochal kol to'eva, you can't eat any forbidden food that's halachically disgusting. So that would serve to combine the two and give them a single name, and therefore they could act together to forbid the mixture. Now, our Mishnah will say, here in Mishnah Base, that's only true where the pint that contained the two cups of different types of iser, or linkilai karam, fell in all at once into the heter. But if you have first a cup of orla that falls into the 100 pints, meaning the 200 cups of chulin, and then you have a cup of kilai hakerem fall into that mixture, which is now actually 201 cups of liquid. So then the liquid remains permitted because there's 200 times against the orla and 200 times against the kilai hakerem, and they do not combine since they didn't fall in at the same time. That's the yisod of this Mishnah here. Okay, and the Mishnah says inside, Hatruma mala esa orla. Truma could be used, ironically, not just to not combine with orla to forbid the mixture, but in fact, even truma could combine with the heter to reach the threshold of 200 to annul the orla, as we'll illustrate in a moment. Va'orla, and same goes, orla can be used as part of the mixture to annul hatruma, to make the truma not count. Ketzad. So here's the illustration. You have to follow it carefully here. Maybe get a pencil if you can even, and write this down. You have sa'at truma shenafalamea. You have one unit of truma that falls into 100 units of chulin. Now the truth is, as the Yerushalmi speaks out, it can't mean literally a full 100 of chulin, because the threshold for bittul, for annulling truma, is 1 against 100. So that would make the whole mixture permitted anyways. That's not the case here. The case is that it's one unit of truma falling into slightly less than 100 units of chulin. So let's call that 99.5. Okay? So one unit of truma into 99.5 chulin, which by itself would make the mixture forbidden, a meduma mixture, because you don't have 100 times chulin against the truma. Va'achar kach, and after that one unit of truma falls in, naflu shlosha kabin orla, half a unit of orla falls into the mix. Okay? O shlosha kabin kilai hakerem, or half unit of kilai hakerem falls into the mix, either or. So that will be the case, as the Mishnah, zuhi sha truma male sa orla. This is the case where truma could be used to annul orla. I'll go through the math in a second for you. Va orla sa truma, and same goes, the orla could annul the truma. Before I just go through the numbers and make it perfectly clear, I hope, at just one point, the Mishnah is using the shear of a saw, which is a typical measure for large volumes, and a saw is comprised of 6 kabin. So when the Mishnah says shlosha kabin, 3 kabin, it's the same as saying half a saw. I don't know why I didn't say it in a more simple way. But in any case, that's just by the by. So here are the numbers. Let's run them through. You have, let's say, 99.5 cups of... The Mishnah's talking about wheat. Let's just talk about liquid. It's more intuitive for us, I think, and simple. 99.5 cups of chulin grape juice, into which 1 cup of truma grape juice falls. So now you have a total of 100.5. The truma would not be annulled unless you had a total of 101, right? You need 1 against 100. Here you have less than that. So right now this is a meduma mixture, and the mixture is forbidden. But then orla, or kilai hakerem, falls in. How much? Half of a cup. So now, the resulting mix has gone up to 101 units. And in the 101 units, you have, let's look at consider the truma issue first. You have one unit of truma, because that's what fell in first, and you have 100 units of non-truma. And that's enough to annul the truma. That non-truma happens to be made of 99.5 cups chulin and half a cup of orla. But it doesn't matter, and that's the Chiddush the Mishnah, that ironically, even though in the previous Mishnah we had said that Orla and Truma can combine, or Orla and Kilai Kerem can combine, any Isserim can combine, that's only if they fall in together. But if they fall in one after the other, so then they actually can be used against each other to annul one another. So that's the case over here. And similarly, the same logic applies if you do the Orla equation. Orla requires 200 times against. In our mixture we had, I'm doing it again now, 99.5 of Chulin. Then one unit of truma falls in. So now you have 100.5, and it's actually a medum mixture. But now you have 0.5 of orla falling in. So the total mixture is now 101. And then 101, you have 0.5, half a cup of orla. And to make it permitted, you'd need to have 200 times that amount. And you do. You actually have 101, excuse me, you have 100.5. You need just 100. 100 is 100 is 200 times half. So in this mixture, you have actually a total of 101. So you have more than 200 times the quantity of orla. You have half a cup of orla and a good 200 plus times of that, because you have 101. Excuse me, you have a total of 100.5 cups of non-orla. So the orla is also annulled. The point is that when you say the mixture is permitted, and you're saying that the orla is annulled, it's only by virtue of the fact that there's truma in the mix. Because if you take the truma out of the mix, remember the mix, let's just sum it up one more time to make sure it's clear. You have 101 units total. 99.5 is chulin, 1 is truma, half is orla, for a total of 101. So if you don't include the truma, you'll have half a unit of orla, and you'll have 99.5 units of chulin. And that's insufficient. You need to have a total of 100 units of chulin to annul the orla. So the only way that the mixture can annul the orla is because you're including truma to lift you past the threshold of 100, which is 200 times a half. And similarly, when it came to annulling the truma, originally you had 1 unit truma against 99.5 units chuin. That's not enough. You need to have a total of 100 units. So the only way you get past that 100 threshold is because you're adding in that half unit of orla. And the 99.5 of chulin plus the half of orla brings it to 100, which allows you now to say that you have 100 non-truma to annul the truma. I just want to emphasize again the difference between this and the previous Mishnah is that here they're falling one after the other, as opposed to in the previous Mishnah where they meaning the Isurim, for example, the Orla and the Kilayim, or the Orla and Truma, fell in all at once. Orla Perek Beis Mishnah Gimel 2-3, we continue to discuss applications of the principle that Isurim, different types of forbidden foods, can be Mevatel Zeh Zeh, can annul one to the other. And here we're going to talk about even where they're Asar Bahana. So the Mishnah says, Ha'orla ma'ales akilayim. You can include Orla in the calculation with the other chulin to annul the kilayim, meaning the kilay ha'kerem. And v'akilayim es orla. Same goes all the way around. Kilayim can be used in combination with heter to offset and annul b'mevatel orla. Same goes if you have orla, v'ha'orla es ha'orla. This is a little confusing. Although it says orla, what it really means, says the Bartanura, is neta ravai, fourth-year produce which comes from orla, meaning orla, which was third-year produce, lapsed into fourth-year produce as neta ravai, and neta ravai is also asar, to eat outside of Yerushalayim. And the point of the Mishnah is that, again, same principle, one can be used to combine with the heter to offset the other. So, Keita, the Mishnah illustrates for us, you have sa'a orla shenafala matayim. You have 1 unit of orla, which falls into 200 units of heter. Again, it can't mean literally 200 like the previous Mishnah. It must mean slightly less than 200, because 1 is 200 already would be totally annulled. So, therefore, the case we're talking about here is, let's say you have 199.5 cups of regular grape juice, and now 1 cup of orla grape juice falls into that. So since you have less than 200 times of chulin against the orla, the whole mixture becomes forbidden. But then va'achar kach, after that happens, nafla sa'od orla, another unit of, when it says orla, once again, it's talking about neta ravai, asr to eat, but another unit of iser, ravai, falls in to the mix. Oh, sa'va'od shel kilay hakerem. And the same would be true if instead of neta ravai falling in, it's another cup, even a cup and a bit, of kilay hakerem, grape juice. So then the whole mixture becomes permitted, meaning we're using the kilay hakerem to, in combination with the chulin, to annul the orla, and the orla in conjunction with the chulin to annul the kilay hakerem. Here are the numbers, same as the last Mishnah, basically, but here I'll run through them with you again. If you have in the recipe 199.5 of chulin, 1 of orla, and 1 of kilayim, that means you have a total of 201.5. Now, that means for the 1 orla, you have 200 plus of non-orla, so the orla is batel, and you have for the 1 unit of kilayim, you have 200 plus units of non-kilayim. So the kilayim is batel. And that being the case, the whole mixture becomes permitted. And that's the case, like we said before, of Isurim Mevatel and Zed Zeh. That's what the Mishnah says inside. Zuhi, this is the case, Sha'orla Ma'ale as a kilayim, where you can use Orla, which is Isur, to annul and make kilayim not be a problem in the mix of the Tarovis. And same goes Vaha Kilayim as a Orla, Va'orla as Orla. Same ways you can have the same principle where you can have kilayim used to offset and annul Orla, or you can have what the Mishnah is calling Orla, which we are understanding to mean Ravai produce can offset the Orla. Orla Perek Base Mishnah Dalad 2-4. We're now going to discuss scenarios where even 1 against 100 for Trumo or against 200 for Orla and Kilai Kerem may not be enough. And that's going to be a case where the effects of the prohibited substance, the Isser, is Nikeret, is evident in the mix. So your classic case of that will be what's called a mechametz, a leavening agent. And that's one of the things our Mishnah will discuss. That's a good illustration. So the scenario is, our very Mishnah will say, if you take some leavening agent, like some sour dough, fermented dough, and you put it into some chulin dough, so that will cause the whole dough to rise. That's how they did it in the time of the Mishnah, when they didn't have yeast, so they got the yeast from the fermenting old dough. So if you have a loaf of bread which is risen, it's clear that you put some sa'or, some sourdough in at the outset. So the point of the Mishnah is, if for argument's sake, say that sourdough was challah, which is a form of truma, and normally the rule is you need to have 100 times against the iser truma to make the mixture permitted. But even if you have, let's say, 1,000 times, just for argument's sake, of regular dough, chulin dough, against the piece of fermenting sa'or, the leaven, the sourdough, since the final cooked loaf of bread has risen, it's screaming that there was sa'or leavening agent inside this bread. That's why it's risen. And if it happens to be that it was less than 100 times, 100 times, less than 1/100 of the whole mix, less than 1 against 100, so it doesn't matter. It's not batel because its presence is clear and its effect on the mixture is nikaret, it's evident to all. That's the gist of the Mishnah. Here, the actual words of the Mishnah are a little tricky because there's a girsa issue. I'm going to go with the Rambam's girsa, even though almost for sure you don't have it in your Mishnayos, because it seems it's very difficult to read the words without that. The Mishnah says, Kol mechametz v'hametabel, anything which is mechametz, it's a catalyst, so it causes something to do chimutz, to rise, to leaven, and a mitabel, or a spice, which infuses something with the strong taste. So that, now the girsa that I'm going to use, the Rambam's girsa is midamea betruma. It causes a truma, a mixture that contains truma, to become a dimua mixture, meaning a mixture of chulin and truma, which is forbidden for a non-kohen to eat, even though it's not pure truma. The reason why is because there's no third category of things that cause truma mixtures. So it's a mechametz and a mitabel, a leavening agent and a spice. Does midamea betruma, does cause truma to become a forbidden mixture. Uva orla, uvi kilahai kerem. And same goes for orla and kilahai kerem. Meaning again, if for argument's sake, your leavening agent, remember we saw in the previous parak that they used to take the sap from unripe figs and use that to curdle cheese. So same idea. If you have, you add a tiny bit of unripe fig sap to some milk, and as a result, you have cheese. So even if there's more than 200 times milk against the catalyst from the figs, the orla figs, so the mixture still is forbidden because the presence of the orla from the fig is screaming, here I am, because you have cheese and not milk. The same would go with kilai hakerem, same idea. So all those cases are osir, meaning that if there is an effect of leavening, a mechametz or metabel, a strong flavor coming, so then the rule of 100 falls away. And we're still strict past 100. Ubeis Shammai omrim af mitame. A different point altogether, says Beis Shammai, nothing to do with Isser and Heter, but rather issue of Tumah and Tahara. He says that the same way you can't say that the source of Isser, the leavening agent, is gone if the bread has risen, so also you can't say, says Beis Shammai, according to the Mishnah here, you can't say that the source of Tumah, if for argument's sake, the leavening agent, that sourdough, was Tame, and it's put into the loaf, the big volume of dough. So you can't say that there's no source of tumah here, and therefore Beis Shammai, according to this Mishnah here, would make the entire mixture tumah, because you have dough into which you added a piece of tumah leaven, and the leaven certainly is significant, so the tumah is not batel, and it spreads. Ubeis Hil omrim, Beis Hil disagrees, and they say, la'olam enu matame. They say, no, no, no. The source of tumah could never be that piece of leavening agent, ad shehebo kebeitza, unless the volume of the leaven, the sourdough, was a kebeitza in size, the size of an egg, like two olives amounts. And the reason for that is because the general rule across the board that we say always, and if in the next mission you'll see, perhaps even Shammai said as well, here, that you cannot convey tumah. A foodstuff that's less than a kebeitza in size can never convey tumah. And that's from the halacha. Anyways, that's our mission. It seems like there's a machlokas over here, perhaps. And if there is, the halacha is like Beis Hillel, but regarding tumah, but stand by, because the next mishnah will actually perhaps overturn that altogether. Orla Perek Beis, Mishnah Hay 2-5. This mishnah is a straight continuation of the previous mishnah, and in fact, I find it surprising it's not part of that mishnah. We had just said in the previous mishnah that Beis Shammai held that if you have a leaven agent in a dough, even if that leaven agent tiny relative to the dough, it's still, if the leavening agent was tame, the whole dough becomes tame. Beis Hillel, who the halacha follows, says no, if the source of leaven, the sourdough, was less than a kabeitza, it could never convey tumah, because that's a rule across the board. So here in Mishnah Hey, we're going to say, Dostai ish kfar yasma, this person whose name was Dostai, and he was an elder from the town of Kfar Yasma. Hayim metalmide Beis Shammai, he was one of Beis Shammai's students, he was from the school. Va'amar, he attested, Shamati mishamei hazaken, I personally heard directly from the mouth of Shammai the elder, Shammai himself, Sha'amar, that he said, La'olam, the case is always, Eino metama achihebo kabeitza, that foodstuffs can never convey tuma unless they have the volume of an egg. And that's what Dostai attests Shammai held all along. And therefore, ostensibly, that's true in the previous mission as well, and they had made a mistake. Be that as it may, it seems mistama that they would be chozer in the previous Mishnah, and Shammai would hold it requires a kabeita like Beis Hillel, and at all events, the halacha certainly follows Beis Hillel, and therefore it's safe to assume everywhere else in Shas that if something is in a kabeita in size, it cannot convey tuma, because that's the rule. Food cannot convey tuma at less than a beitza's volume, egg volume. Orla Perik Beis, Mishnah Vav, 2-6. We continue the topic we discussed back on 2-4. Regarding the power of a mechametz and a metabel, something that's there to be a leavening agent, or something that is a spice, so that can cause dimua, that can cause a mixture. If the spice or the leavening agent is truma, that can cause the mixture to be usser, in unconventional ways relative to the usual rules. So the Mishnah here is predicated on this tradition that the Tanaim had. There were two statements that they learned by Kabbalah and their tradition, and one of them said, "Kol mechametz v'metabel midamea." I'm using the same the Girsas Rambam, like I said last time. Whatever can cause leavening or can spice, it causes a dimua mixture. Meaning, if the leavening agent or the spice is truma, so then it causes the mixture into which it falls to be forbidden to a non-kohen. Lahachmir, always stringently. That's one version of what they had. And the other version they had is kol mechametz umetabel midamea lahachmir ulahakel. Sometimes it's stringent and sometimes it's lenient. So obviously those both things can't be true. Either it has to be one or the other. And therefore our Mishnah here is coming to resolve the fact that there's one set of mixtures, namely, as we'll see in a moment, it's min b'mino mixtures, where it's always machmir, it's always strict. And in min b'she'eno mixtures, as we'll see really more in the next Mishnah, a mixture of two different types, then it's sometimes machmir strict and sometimes it's mekel lenient. So the Mishnah says, ulama. Now this, make a note, this doesn't say velama and why. It says ulama, and to what amru did they say? Meaning, what did they apply the phrase that they had by tradition, quote, kol mechametz v'metabel midamei lahachmir? When do they say it's true that if you have a mechametz or metabel, a leavening agent or a spice, it causes dimu in the mixture if that source is a truma source, always strict? That's min b'mino, says the Mishnah. In a min b'mino mixture, as we'll illustrate in a moment, lahakul lahachmir, when does it say sometimes it's strict, sometimes it's lenient, sometimes it's strict, when you have a mechametz or metabel? That, says the Mishnah, is min b'she'en amino, when you have a mixture of two different types, which we'll describe in Mishnah Zayin. Ketzad, so the Mishnah illustrates. Let's say, for example, you have sa'or shel chitim. You have sa'or, here it means a leavening agent, so sourdough, of chitim, meaning of wheat. So it's basically a fermented wheat flour dough, and that would be the leavening agent, meaning they didn't have yeast in those days, so instead they would use this to leaven their bread. And it's potent. You may not need to have, let's say, 60 times against. Perhaps you could have 100 or 200 times more flour than the leavening agent and still would leaven according to your recipe. So the Mishnah points out here, therefore, if you have sa'or shel chitim, if you have wheat leavening agent, and it's a truma, shenafa latoch isas chitim, and it falls into a larger dough of wheat flour. So this is a min b'mino mixture. You have wheat dough into wheat flour dough. So then, v'yesh bo kedei lechametz. So the two possibilities are either there is enough sourdough in the mix now to cause the whole dough to rise? And if that's the case, then, as we said in Mishnah Dalid, you can't ignore the presence of the leavening agent because it's screaming, here I am, because the dough is risen. And that being the case, bein sheyesh bo lahalos be'echad omeya, or bein she'ein bo lahalos be'echad omeya, usur. It doesn't matter if you have 100 times or not of heter against the iser, of the dough that's not of chulin dough against the truma leavening dough. It doesn't matter, it's usur, it's forbidden. The whole mixture is forbidden to a non-Kohen because as a leavening agent, it's strict even past 100 if it is enough leaven to make the dough rise. So it's l'chumra, that's strict. And similarly, ein bo lalos be'echad omeya. So then, if you don't have 100 times of dough against a leavening agent, then it doesn't matter. Bein sheyesh bo kedei l'chametz or bein she'ein bo kedei l'chametz. It doesn't matter if it could or couldn't leaven the dough sufficiently to make the recipe proper to make bread. Usur, it's forbidden. So meaning it's strict still. So however you slice it, it is what we would say in English, the worst of both worlds, or the the greater of the threshold is the greater of the two. Meaning, if it either could make the dough rise, or there's less than 100 times of heter against it, so then the whole mixture is forbidden as a timua mixture. The next mishnah will discuss the other side of the coin, the min bishenom, which is sometimes strict and sometimes lenient. Oral Perek Beis Mishnah Zion 2:7, a straight continuation of the previous mishnah. We had said that there were two traditions regarding the amounts required if you have a mechametz or metabel, a source of leavening or a source of spicing, that's a truma source that falls into your chulin if it makes the whole mixture into a meduma mixture, a mixture that's forbidden to a non-Kohen. So here we have the other side of the coin, lahakel lahachmer, why sometimes such a agent, leavening agent or flavoring agent, could be strict and sometimes lenient. The basis of this mishnah is predicated on one simple point which I made previously in the perek, which is that the rule of requiring 100 times against the truma only applies in a min bemino mixture. That was based on a smachta, that it's, we're concerned about the truma smaiser not being separated properly or falling back in. But if you're talking about a min bishena mixture, meaning that there's two different types, the truma that falls in is of a different type of food than the chulin into which it falls. So then we're back to just requiring tam, taste. If you can taste the truma, then or you can detect the truma, so then it's usur, and if not, it's mutter, and there's no rule of 100. Therefore, the Mishnah says, lahakel ulahachmir, when is it that you have the mechametz and metabel that could be strict or lenient in a dimu mixture? So that is min b'she'eno mino. That's when you have that type of mixture where the truma that falls in is of a different type of food than the food into which it falls. Ketad, how would that be? So, for example, kagon, grisin, if you have beans, shnizbashlu im adashim, that are being cooked together with lentils. So that means your main food here is the lentil. You have some beans there, which will add flavor. The beans are truma beans. So the issue is going to be if you can detect the taste of those beans in the lentils. Lentils, I guess, are a very bland food and therefore receptive to taste even from a little bit. So the Mishnah says simply, V'yeshbem nosan tam, if you can taste the truma beans in the lentils, bein sheyeshbem lalos be'echad omeya, bein she'ein behem lalos be'echad omeya, it doesn't matter if you have 100 times against of lentils against the beans or not. It remains asur, because if you can taste it, you can taste it. Ein behem benosan tam, if you cannot taste those beans in the lentils, then bein sheyesh behem lalos bechromeo, bein she'ein behem lalos bechromeo. So then it doesn't matter if you have 100 times of lentil against the beans or not. Mutter, it's permitted. Meaning it simply goes after if you can taste the mitabel, the flavoring source in your mixture. Orla Perek Beis, Mishnah Ches 2:8. We've just established in the previous Mishnayos that if you have a leavening agent, so then in a min bamino mixture, if the leavening agent is the same type as the dough into which it falls, so then it doesn't matter if you have 100 times of dough against leavening agent. It's forbidden at all events, as long as the dough is risen, because you can still feel and detect the effects of the presence of the truma leavening agent. So here the Mishnah will consider something a little more subtle. What happens if Seor shel chulin, you have a leavening agent that's regular, good old-fashioned, permitted leavening agent. Shenaf letoch isa, that goes into your dough. So far there's not a question. Everything is A-OK. And V'yesh bo kedei lechametz. If you leave it as is, your dough would rise properly, meaning you have the sufficient and right amount of chulin, regular leavening agent, to make the bread properly. V'achar kach, however, after that, prior to the dough rising, nafal se'or shel truma, additional leavening agent falls in. And this leavening agent, this sourdough, is truma sourdough. So now you've got a problem, because that, if it had fallen in by itself, already would cause the whole mixture to be forbidden. So the question now is, if that's what falls in, and there's sufficient, this amount of truma sourdough on its own, as we'll see in a moment of the Mishnah, would have been sufficient to leaven the dough. And the Mishnah says parenthetically, oh, se'or shel kilai ha-kerem, doesn't matter if it's truma, the same would be true if what the sourdough was kilai ha-kerem sourdough, meaning you had wheat that was growing beneath a grapevine, and then you turned it into flour and made it into sourdough, etc. It's also asr bahana. The yesh bo, the amount after you have the regular proper chulin sourdough falling into the mix, you additionally have this forbidden sourdough to fall into the mix, and also it, v'yesh bo kedei lechametz, it also could have leavened the dough on its own. So then, even though you didn't need the sourdough that was the forbidden sourdough to make this work, since it fell in, and since it did its thing, meaning its effects on the dough are evident because it worked hand in hand with the permitted sourdough to sort of expedite and make the dough rise faster and rise properly, even pass properly. So therefore, since it had its effect on the dough, it's usser. The dough is now usser. You can't deny that the sourdough of isser is in the mix. You might ask, why isn't this a case of ze v'ze gorem? We'll actually learn about that in a couple of Mishnayos. Why isn't this a case of two things working together? An usser thing and a mutter thing working together, in which case the rule is bidyevet at least. The mixture is permitted. So the answer is that zev zeh gorem is only true if the isser couldn't have done it on its own. But in this case over here, the quantity of forbidden sourdough that fell in was sufficient. It was kedei lechametz. It was enough to make the dough on its own. And therefore, it's forbidden in its own right. And since it did help make the dough rise, it makes the whole dough forbidden. Orla, Perek Beis Mishnah Tes, 2:9. This Mishnah is a straight continuation of the previous, but a slightly different case. Here we see it says, Se'or shel chulin shenaf letoch isa v'chimta. Same as the previous case, you have sourdough, the leavening agent, which is chulin. It's permitted totally, and it goes into the dough. But unlike the previous case, where the dough hadn't fully risen before the itzer is added, here, v'chimta, the dough does become fully risen already. Nothing has fallen in, so you have a totally kosher dough that was leavened by totally kosher sourdough. V'achar kach, and after that, nafal se'or shel truma, gets mixed into the dough, additional leavening agent, some more sourdough, but this sourdough is truma, meaning it's iser, o se'or shel kilai ha-kerem, or it's iser of a different type, it's kilai ha-kerem dough, as I explained in the previous Mishnah. So, v'yesh bo kedei lechametz, if there's enough sourdough of iser that it alone could have made the proper recipe to make this dough rise into a proper bread, then usra, then the whole mixture becomes forbidden. Rabbi Shimon's matter. Shimon says, nope, he disagrees, and says in such a scenario, the dough would be permitted. Let me explain Rabbi Shimon first. Rabbi Shimon holds, as actually everyone's going to hold, there's a principle of nosin tam lefagam. If you add something to a mixture, and even if you can taste that iser, which was added to the mixture, but the taste which it contributes is actually a negative taste, it's pogem, it ruins the mixture. So then the principle is that the iser doesn't make the whole mixture forbidden. And therefore Rabbi Shimon says over here, that's what's happening. You had perfectly fine dough, you added more sourdough to it, now it's going to become over-fermented and become too yeasty, and actually it'll ruin the bread. And that being the case, it's nosin tam lefagam, the extra part that fell in, and that being the case, is mutter. And that really stands to reason, that should be the halacha, and everyone should agree to it. The problem is the Tana Kama says, listen, it's true that this dough now doesn't become, it becomes less tasty as dough, and that would normally mean nosin tam lefagam, it's adding a bad taste. However, there's a separate thing they use dough for, and that is as leavening agent, as sourdough. And as far as if you look at it as sourdough, actually the additional Isser which fell in made it a better sourdough. Therefore, the Tanakhama says that's not called Nosen Tam Lefagam because it's been improved in a different way. And therefore, the Tanakhama holds that the mixture now is a Meduma mixture if it was Truma and the whole thing becomes Aser. The Halacha is actually going to follow the Tanakhama, meaning in this scenario, the whole mixture would stay Aser. However, the Tanakhama certainly agrees, as we'll see in the Kalb Mishnayos, that in general, if something is added to a mixture and the Tarovis, the Iser component is Nosen Tam Lefagam, it ruins it or makes it taste less good, so then the mixture remains permitted. That's the Mishnah here. Now, there is a question about Rabbi Shimon and his opinion about the previous Mishnah. So the Pashat reading, and the Pashat Pshat, this is like Rabbi Zeira and the Gemara, is that Rabbi Shimon, while he holds in this Mishnah that the mixture is permitted because the added sourdough was Nosen Tam Lefagam, in the previous Mishnah, since the dough hadn't yet risen, so at the moment that the forbidden sourdough is added, it's not ruining the taste. Even though in a few minutes it'll sort of overshoot the mark, become over-leavened and be ruined, at the time it falls in, it's actually beneficial to the dough. And that being the case, he would agree in the previous Mishnah that the whole mixture is forbidden. There are, however, another Shita in Amoraim that Rabbi Shimon would also say in the previous case, since the added sourdough of Isser is going to ruin the dough now, that's already called Nosen Tam Lefagam at that point. However, the Pashas, like I said, is that Rabbi Shimon only is Mater in this Mishnah, and everyone agrees in principle that Nosen Tam Lefagam in general does not forbid the mixture, and in this case, however, Mishnah test, Halacha follows the Tanakhama, the Chachamim, that extra sourdough of Isser falling into dough makes the whole mixture forbidden, because the mixture, while not tasty for eating, is now improved for the sake of being a leavening agent. Orler Perek Beis, Mishnah Yud, 2:10. We return now to the topic that we started the Perek with, and that is the topic of Tziruf, of combining different types of Yisurim. So back in Aleph, we had said that, according to the Tanakhama, who's actually Rabbi Meir, if you have two different Yisurim, they will combine. We had the examples over there of Kila HaKerem and Orla, and we said they are combining to meet the requisite shear, both in Mim Bamino and Mim B'Shein Amino. And Rabbi Shimon said, no, they don't combine. So here the Mishnah really repeats that point and adds one new one, small one. It says, Tavlin, if you have spices, Shnaim or Shlosha Shemos, Mimin Echad, you have two or three different names, meaning two different types of Isser, or three different types of Isser, one particular species. So the Bartanur gives an example of pepper. Pepper grows on a tree, like peppercorns, black pepper, and therefore, for argument's sake, if you have pepper spicing your soup, if there's not enough pepper, and there's three, the pepper is made of three different components. Some pepper is orla, from an orla tree. Pepper grows on like a tree, a vine. And some of it is an asherah, it was worshipped. The tree was worshipped, and some of it is truma. So each of the three different pepper components, according to the Tanakhama, combine. And if even if there's not enough truma pepper or orla pepper or shera pepper by themselves to spice the soup so you could taste it, but if all three do combine to make their taste known, then they are mitzaref. They do combine to make the requisite amount and make the whole soup forbidden. That is the sheet of the Tanakhama, like we had back in Mishnah Aleph. And similar, that's nothing new. In addition, the Mishnah now adds on, O Mishlosha, even if you have one Isser, let's say Orla, but from three different types of food. So for argument's sake, I don't know, you have apples, oranges, and pears. Or in the case of, if it's Tavlin, if it's spices, so then you have three different types of spices. You have pepper, and you have whatever, three different types of spices that all have Isser. So then again, Asur Umitzarfim, says the Tanakhama, Premier, They do combine, since they're both serving, or all three are serving the same function, to spice up the soup, let's say. So they combine forces, and they all add up together. And if in combination you can taste them, and they spice the soup, so then the mixture is forbidden. Rabbi Shimon, who had disagreed in the first Mishnah and said they don't combine, he agrees the same thing over here, he holds the same shita. He says, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shnaim or Shlosha Shemos Mimin Echad, if you have two or three different Isurim combining of one particular type of food, just like we saw in the first Mishnah, we talked about a cup of grape juice or wine. That was Kilai HaKerem and Orla, so it's the same kind of thing. But let's say you have Kilai HaKerem and Orla and Asherah, grape juice. Still, they don't combine. Or even Oshnei Minim Mishem Echad, or if you have two different species of the meaning two different types of food from the same type of iser. So in other words, again, you have the Bartanura brings an example. If you have pepper and ginger, and they're both truma, so then they do combine. According to Rabbi Shimon, they do not combine. Each one stands by themselves, and that being the case, enem mitzarfen, and unless the ginger by itself or the pepper by itself could spice the dish sufficiently to be tasted, etc., so then they don't combine, and the dish remains permitted. Halacha is like the Tanakama, like it was back in Mishnah Aleph as well. Orla Perik Beis, Mishnah Yud Aleph, 2:11. This Mishnah really picks up on a topic we discussed back in 2:8. There we had a case of a dough into which some leavening agent fell that was permitted, and then more leavening agent fell into the dough, which was forbidden. And each of the two leavening agents, in and of themselves, could have made the dough rise sufficiently. So there we said the whole mix is forbidden because the forbidden leavening agent expedited the leavening process and made the dough ferment in time. And even if it overshot the mark, it doesn't matter because the dough, even if it becomes too fermented and inedible, so then it can be used as sa'or. The point is that the effects of the forbidden dough are certainly nikar, they're evident, and therefore the mixture is forbidden. And there I threw in a point which may have seemed a little bit superfluous at the time, that we do not say the principle of ze veze gorem mutar. We don't apply the rule that if you have two things working in concert, one of those things is permitted and one of those things is forbidden, and they work together. The usual rule lahalacha, which will be the machlokas of our Mishnah here in Yud Aleph, but the usual rule lahalacha is ze veze gorem is mutar, meaning if you have two things working together and one of them is forbidden and one of them is permitted, then the output is normally going to be, at least bidi'evid, after the fact, it'll be permitted. Like, for example, we had a case in the beginning in the previous perek, in our Masechta here, we said, you're not allowed to plant a nut of an orla tree, and you are allowed to plant the branch of an orla tree, a tree in its first 3 years. And then I said, that if you do plant that nut, bidi'evid, after the fact, the tree that grows from that nut, that was an orla nut, will be permitted, even though you can't get benefit from the nut because it's an orla nut, but since the nut alone couldn't make a tree grow, it has to have the nut plus the soil, etc., and the soil is not forbidden. So it's a zeveze gorem, the nut added to the tree, but so do the soil, and that both are components to making the tree grow. And since one of the components is forbidden and one is permitted, it's zeveze gorem, and after the fact, anyways, it is permitted. So that was the same. We said that didn't apply in Mishnah Chet, because over there, the forbidden quantity of leaven all by itself could have made the dough rise. And therefore, just because you have added into it some permitted leavening agent, that doesn't solve the problem. And that's the big difference. Since the leavening agent that was forbidden could do it by itself, we don't say zev zegorim. Now, in our Mishnah, we discuss the very machlokus of whether or not zev zegorim is mutar. The Mishnah says, se'or shel chulin v'shel truma. You have a leavening agent, some of which is permitted, is chulin, and some of which is truma, is forbidden. Shenafla toch isa, and they both fall into the dough. Lo bezeh kedei lechametz v'lo bezeh bedei lechametz. Neither of the two portions of leavening agent by themselves would be sufficient to make the dough rise. And therefore, they only work in concert. And v'nitztarfu v'chimtzu, that's exactly what they do. They work together to make the dough rise. So, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, Achar ha'achron aniba, I consider what went in last. I'll come back to that. V'chacham omrim, bein shenafal iser betchila, bein besof. It doesn't matter, say the chum, which fell in first and which fell in second. It doesn't matter. La'olam eino oser, the forbidden component won't forbid the whole dough. Ad shehei bo kedei lechametz, unless the dough that was forbidden in and of itself was sufficient to make the dough rise. And since it was not in this case, we will apply the rule of zev zeh gorem, and the chacham hold that zev zeh gorem is mutter. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees, and he holds zev zeh gorem is usser. Now, the words of the Mishnah are a little misleading because they sound as if, I'll read the words again to you, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, achar ha'achron aniba. I consider what fell in second, after the second ingredient is what I go after, and that suggests, but incorrect, it's an incorrect understanding according to the Gemara Pesachim. it suggests that if first fell in the iser, and then before, since it couldn't do the leavening all by itself, then fell in the heter, so then the mixture would be permitted. That's not quite true. The case is, certainly if first fell in the heter, and then the iser fell in second, bringing it to leaven, so then he would for sure hold the mixture as forbidden, because that's a zev zeh gorem. They work together, and he holds zev zeh gorem as usser. However, in the case where first fell in the iser, the truma leaven, and then fell in the heter, the chulin leaven, so he only holds it would be permitted in the event that first you pulled out the forbidden component. If you first pull out the forbidden component of iser, and then it's out of there, it's gone, but and then you have a second addition of additional chulin, which brings the dough to being properly fermented. So then he discounts the first portion. Since it's been removed, he doesn't say the rule of chose verner as if it's come back, because it's not. It's been removed, and its effects aren't being felt sufficiently to forbid the final mixture. So it's a little misleading. The bottom line and the main takeaway of the Mishnah is that if you have a zevaze gorum scenario, them working together, Rabbi Elazar holds it's forbidden, the Chacham holds it's permitted, at least b'di'evid, and the slight nuance to understand the mission properly is Rabbi Elazar holds if first fell in the iser, and then you removed it, and then fell in the heter, and that's the two work together now to bring it to rise. So then Rabbi Elazar still says that the mixture is permitted, because since you've removed the first component, he thinks its effects are not sufficiently significant to forbid the mixture, since it only became totally fermented properly to the finish line, thanks to the second and now only ingredient of heter, of leavening agent in the mix. Orla, Perek Beis, Mishnah Yud Beis, 2:12, a straight continuation of the previous Mishnah. It says, Yoezer Ish Habira, his name was Yoezer, and he was a prominent person in Habira, presumably this is a place on the Har Habayis. He was in charge over there of something. Hayam Talmide Beis Shammai, and he was from the school of Beis Shammai. Va'amar, and he testified, he said, Sha'alti es Rabban Gamliel Hazaken, he said that I asked personally Rabban Gamliel, the elder, that was the senior Rabban Gamliel who was alive at the end of Bayesheni, he was a grandson of Hillel HaZaken, Omed Bishar HaMizrach, while Rabban Gamliel was standing at the eastern gate entering to the Har HaBayis, and I asked him the very question of the previous Mishnah. Va'amar, and he said to me, La'olam Eino Oser, he, Rabban Gamliel, said that the mixture is never going to be forbidden, Ad Shehebo Kedei L'chametz, unless the component that's Oser in and of itself is sufficient to cause the dough to rise. And indeed, that's the halacha. And here you see, fascinatingly, that someone from Beis Shammai was prepared to ask and presumably even follow the school of Beis Hillel. Orla Perek Beis, Mishnah Yud Gimel, 2:13. We actually leave the topic we've been discussing up to now about forbidden mixtures and Isser V'Heter. Now we're going to a question of Tuma and Tahara. And the reason we're discussing this Mishnah here is because structurally it's almost identical to Mishnah Yud Aleph. We're talking here, just a bit of background, we're talking here about using oil to soften leather utensils, like, for example, a shoe. So the shoe is made of hard leather, you want to use oil to soften it. So if you apply tame oil to the shoe, so the shoe will become tame, at least midrabanan. The rule is midrabanan, all liquids, and certainly oil, olive oil is tame as a rishon, in all events, midrabanan. And midrabanan also, there's a separate din that Tame liquids are able to be matama kalim to make them into a sheni. So by applying the tame liquid oil to the leather utensil becomes tame. Now, even if you put it in the mikvah and make the leather utensil tahor, let's call it a shoe, so then when you put the shoe on and you wear it, presumably some of the oil that was embedded in the shoe now leaks out. It's pressed out as you wear the shoe. And that being the case, if and when the oil leaves the shoe, it will re-convey tuma to the shoe. So our question is one, really, if you're an accountant, you have an accounting background, you'll recall the question of LIFO versus FIFO accounting. Really, this Mishnah follows that very question and has a machlokas between the Chum and Rabbi Elazar regarding how do we look at the situation if you first used, let's say, tahor oil and then followed up with tame or vice versa, tame then tahor. When the oil comes out, do we consider that oil to be the first one that went in or the second one that went in to determine whether or not the oil that comes out is tame or tahor? That's the thrust of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says inside. Kalim shesachan b'shemen tamei. You have utensils that are leather that you anoint, you oil with tamei oil. And that will make the, it's called a shoe, the shoe tamei. Now, if you put the shoe in, if the shoe dries and then you put the shoe in the mikvah, so the shoe will come out tahor. And then v'chazer v'sachan shemen tahor, you apply more oil. This is tahor oil. So the shoe now is totally tahor at the moment. The question will be what happens when the oil is squeezed out in a moment. But before we say that, we have a similar case in reverse. Oh, shesachan b'shemen. What happens if first you apply oil that is tahor, and then once it's dried, you wipe it down. V'chazer v'sachan b'shemen tamei. Then you apply a second layer coating application of oil. This is tamei oil. I'm rendering the shoe tamei. But then you put that shoe in the mikvah after it dries. So now you have a tahor shoe. The question is, what happens if when you put the shoe on and squeeze oil out, will the shoe become tamei? Do we treat it as the tamei oil coming out? Or we say the shoe is tahor, saying the tahor shoe oil is coming out. And the question then really is, which do we consider the one that came out? The one that went in last and it comes back out again, or the one that went in first? Rabbi Eliezer Omer, achar harishon aniba, I follow after whatever went in first. Again, you see structurally paralleling Mishnah Yud Aleph. And therefore he says, if the first application was tamei oil, now I'll say the shoe was tamei. Whereas if the shoe was first anointed with tahor oil, I'll say what comes out now is tahor, and the shoe is tahor. And the Chum disagree, and they say achra achron. They say where last in is first out, meaning that whatever's put in last is closer to the surface, so, and that's what comes out when the shoe is squeezed. So that being the case, if you first applied tamei and then tahor oil second, the shoe was tahor. If you first apply tahor and then tamei second, the shoe is tamei. And the halacha is like the Chachamim. Orla Perek Beis, Mishnah Yud Daled, 2:14. We now go back to the topic we were discussing before regarding Orla and forbidden mixtures and leavening agents. And the Mishnah really returns to the discussion we had in Mishnah Aleph and in Mishnah Yud of the machlokes between the Tanakama, who was Rebbe Meir, who said that different types of Isser with different shemos, different categories do combine. And Rabbi Shimon said, no, they don't. If there's not enough of each source of Isser by themselves in the mixture to crush whatever the threshold is that's relevant, so then each Isser stands alone, and in fact, each Isser can be mevatel to the other Isser. So here we're talking about Saor, leavening agents, and there's not too much of a chiddush here once you put together the pieces we set up to now. The Mishnah says, Saor shel truma v'shel kilai hakerem. You have two units of leavening agent. One unit was truma, which of course is forbidden to non-kohanim, and one is kilai hakerem, that's forbidden to everybody, kohanim and non-kohanim alike. Shnaf l'toch isa, and they fell into the dough. Lo bezek de lechamet, and this is very important, there wasn't enough leaven of the truma variety to cause the dough to rise. Lo bezek de lechamet, nor was there enough of the kilai hakerem, leavening agent by itself, to cause the dough to rise. However, v'nitztarfu v'chimtzu, they combine, and in combination they can act in concert to make a sufficient amount of leavening agent to make the dough rise. So we know that will mean that according to the Tanakama, they do combine and the whole mixture should become usser. And that being the case, it is usser, but not to everybody. It's only usser to people who can eat neither component, truma nor kilai hakerem. Now, of course, to kohanim, truma is not isser. Truma is permitted to them. And therefore the Mishnah says, usser l'zarim. If you're a non-Kohen, a Zar, then the mixture is forbidden to you because the two sources of Isser combine, say the Tanakama, umutel kohanim. But according to the Tanakama, even if the Isurim do combine, that's only peculiar to the person, meaning if the person's a Kohen, it's not Isser to him. And that being the case, the only forbidden component in the mixture is the Kilai HaKerem, and that one by itself could not cause the mixture to rise, and therefore it's mutar lekohanim, a Kohen could eat this mixture. Rabbi Shimon, who as usual doesn't consider the two different types of Isurim ever to combine, he is matir lezarim v'lekohanim. He says a Kohen and non-Kohen alike could eat this bread because there isn't enough of the kilai hakerem to leaven it by itself, which is the source that's usher to everybody. But worth pointing out, as we've said already before, if there had been enough of the kilai hakerem leavening agent by itself to leaven the dough, then regardless of how much truma is added, the mixture would be forbidden to kohanim and non-kohanim alike, even according to Rabbi Shimon. Orla Perek Beis, Mishnah Tesvav, 2:15, and really again, it's very similar to the previous Mishnah. It says tavlin. We're talking here about spices instead of leavening agents, but otherwise it's very similar. Tavlin shel truma v'shel kilai hakerem. you have spices in the dish. Some of them are truma, forbidden to non-kohanim. Some of them are kila hakerem, forbidden to everybody. Shnafl b'kadera, and they together fall in to the food as it's cooking. Lo be'elu k'de l'sabel, v'lo be'elu k'de l'sabel. Neither of the two types of spices, on each on their own, could have been sufficient to spice the food and you would taste it. But when it's darfu v'tiblu, but they do combine together to make the food spiced. You can taste them now when they work in concert. So, like the previous Mishnah, according to Tanakama, since they're two different types of asurim, but they still combine, asur lazarim, since a non-Kohen has to look at truma as isser, like kilai kerem, so it'll be forbidden to a non-Kohen, a zar. Umutzal kohanim, but a Kohen who's allowed to eat the truma only has some isser, not enough that by itself it could forbid the mix, and therefore it's much as the kohanim. And Rabbi Shimon, who holds anyways that two types of isurim never combine, they have different names, he's matzal zarim v'la kohanim. He says Kohen and non-Kohen alike could eat the mixture because they're two separate shemos, two different categories of isser that don't combine, as the case throughout the whole perek here. This Mishnah is so similar to the previous Mishnah that they all ask the question, what is the Chiddush here? The Rambam suggests, perhaps, that our case here is where you have two different types of spices, meaning, I don't know what, like salt, and not like pepper and garlic or something, two different types of food, and the two different types of food carry two different types of isurim. You know, one is kilah hakerem and one is truma. So that means they're like sort of, they have tart l'reis, they have two aspects where you might want to not let them combine. Two different types of food and two different categories of iser. And even so, the chiddush is they do combine according to the Tanakama to make the mixture usser in a scenario where both components are taka iser, like is the case if we're talking about non-kohanim as they relate to truma. Halacha, like this and all the previous Mishnayos, goes like the Tanakama, meaning the two types of isser, or even two types of food, do combine to make the whole mixture forbidden to those to whom the components are all forbidden, like a non-kohen in the case of this Mishnah. Orla Perek Base, Mishnah Tez Zayin, 2:16. The principles of this Mishnah are largely the same as the principles laid out in the previous Mishnayos, and really it's just a setup for the last Mishnah of the Perek, and to some degree. That's how the Tosfos Yontov explains what even we have to have such a Mishnah for in the first place, because there's really nothing new being added in truth. The Mishnah will discuss a mixture, Tarovis, of Kadshe Kachim, Pigel, and Nosar, along with other generic Chulin meat. So what are these things? Just the background. Kadshe Kachim is sacrificial meat, in the context of our Mishnah here, that came from a Chatas or an Asham Korban, and Kadshe Kachim may be eaten only by Kohanim, actually only male Kohanim inside the Azar, the temple courtyard. But the point is it's permitted to Kohanim under certain circumstances. We'll assume that the meat still going to be consumed in this Mishnah is being consumed under those circumstances. The Mishnah also discusses pigel. Pigel is when one is doing one of the four essential procedures of a zevach, of a sacrificial animal, which are the shchita, the slaughtering, the kabbalah, the receiving of the blood, the holacha, the bringing of the blood to the mizbech, the temple altar, and the zrika, the application of that blood to the altar. Those four steps, shchita, kabbalah, holacha, and zrika, are all essential, in as much as if one has even a deviant thought during those processes, so that could make the entire offering totally now puzzle, invalid, and can't be brought. And one of those forbidden thoughts is the thought that's referred to as chutz lizmano, that you intend to have some components of this offering to be consumed either by the people who would eat it or by the mizbeach, the altar itself, which is, so to speak, consumes the blood and the emurim, the portions of the offering which are burned upon the altar. So there are certain deadlines for when these things have to be brought, each on their own. I don't want to get into right now so much. But the point is, when the person who is performing the rites of shchita or kabbalah or holacha or zrika on a korban, should he think at that time, oh, I'm going to have some component of this offering to be consumed outside of the proper time, that renders the offering pigel, It's actually a verb, mifagel, in the noun pigul. It's invalidated. It's a term of art that means just what I just described it as. And pigul korbanos are forbidden for consumption, actually under penalty of karis, of a premature death and severance, spiritual severance. So we're talking about pigul being in the mix of this meat stew. It's forbidden for everyone, kohen and non-kohen alike. We'll also mention nosar. Nosar is the leftover components of sacrificial offerings and beyond their respective deadlines, or different deadlines for different things. But once they pass the deadline, they become nosar, leftovers. And nosar is equally forbidden, like pigul, meaning if one does consume nosar, the penalty is karis. In our girsa and our mishnayos here, that's all we have. The Bar Tanura also had tame, meaning sacrificial meats which were rendered tame. And in truth, usually pigul, nosar, and tame work as sort of a trio, because all of them carry that penalty of karis. So whether or not it's included here in the Mishnah, the principle doesn't change. The point is you have three components which are potentially iser in the mixture, meaning kachay kachim, which a non-kohen may not eat, as well as pigul and nosar, which kohen and non-kohen alike may not eat, and they're combining to flavor this meat stew. So like the previous Mishnah, we're going to say, and a couple of previous Mishnahs, we're going to say that according to the Tanakh Kamma, they do combine, and therefore, since one of the ingredients is kachay kachim, it's usher to non-kohanim, and therefore, if they combine together, so then the mixture becomes forbidden for all non-kohanim, and for kohanim, since kachay kachim is permitted to kohanim, the whole mixture is permitted to kohanim, assuming there's a requisite amount of the regular food, the mutter meat, to offset the pigul and nosar in the mix. And Rabbi Shimon, once again, is going to disagree and say, listen, these are different categories of Isser, and therefore they don't combine under any circumstances, and therefore Kohen and non-Kohen alike may eat them. Okay? Now, here the Mishnah says inside, Chaticha shel kadshe kachem, one piece of meat which was kadshe kachem meat, forbidden to non-Kohanim, and shel pigul, a piece of pigul meat, which is forbidden to everybody, vishel nosar, and a piece of nosar, leftover meat from the korban, which is forbidden to everybody. Shnezbashlu im hachatichos. They were all cooked together in one big cholent pot, this big meat stew. And there would be enough meat in the stew to offset each of these components individually, but not all of them combined. Asher lezarim umutz lekohanim. Says the Tanakh Kamma here that a non-Kohen can't eat the mixture because the three components combine, whereas a Kohen could eat the mixture. Of course, that would mean that the numbers have to work out, that the pigul and nosar are less, let's call it, than a 60th. They're not nos and tam, if that's the case, or 60th if it's min v'mino, in the mix to make it permitted to a Kohen. Rabbi Shimon's matir lazarim v'lekohanim. Rabbi Shimon says, in all events, the mixture is permitted to Kohen and non-Kohen alike because each of the different categories of Isser do not combine. And again, there's really very little, if any, chiddush in this Mishnah relative to the previous Mishnayos. And Tos Yontov, as I said before, says the whole point of this Mishnah really is just to introduce the last Mishnah of the Perek, Yud Zayin, which does have, builds on these principles to some degree and actually has a new chiddush inside of it. Ola Perek Beis, Mishnah Yud Zayin, and the last Mishnah of this long Perek. We're now going to have a discussion here about sacrificial meat called kadshim. And kadshim is forbidden to a tamei person. The chiddush this Mishnah, which really builds on the previous Mishnayos, is that although Rabbi Shimon in each of the case of so many previous Mishnayos had said if there are different categories of Isser, they don't combine, here kadshim can come in two varieties, kadshe kadshim and kadshim kalim. Kadshe kadshim, the more restricted, sanctified korbanos, which include the ola, the chatas, the asham, menachos, shalmei tzibur, and kachim kalim, the less restricted, lower sanctification level sacrificial offerings, which include general shlamim, as well as the toda, the bechor, the meiser, and the korban pesach. So the kachay kachim can be eaten by anybody, as long as they're tahor and inside Yerushalayim. But a tamei person can't eat kachim. Equally, may not eat kachim kalim, nor may eat kachim kalim. So the main chiddush of our Mishnah here is that even Rabbi Shimon would agree that kadshe kadshim and kachim kalim do combine to make a mixture that would forbid, that would be forbidden to tame persons' consumption, because kachim kalim and kache kachim both are the same shame. They're the iser of to a tame person is that they're kachim. That's considered to be the same name, same category, and therefore, even though they're called kachim kachim and kachim kadshe kachim and kachim kalim, they are not really considered two different names, and therefore they do combine. And Rabbi Shimon would even agree. And that's what the Mishnah says inside. It says basar kadshe kachim. You have meat from kadshe kachim, ubasar kachim kalim, and other meat from kachim kalim. Shnizbashlu, and those two pieces of meat cook together. Im basar ataiva, with other generic non-sacrificial, non-restricted meat. The Chazal refer to generic meat for human consumption as basar taiva, meat of desire, if you will, referring to the fact that it was given after the time of Noah for human consumption as a response to humans' desire for flesh. So, that being the case, they do combine, and therefore asla tameim umut l'taharim, they'll be forbidden to the mixture will be forbidden to tame people, because tame people can't eat kachi kachim nor kachim kalim, and it'll be mutta taharim. If someone is tahor, he could eat the mixture, again under proper circumstances, being in Yerushalayim, being tahor, etc. But the chiddush of the Mishnah is, as I said before, here Rabbi Shimon does not disagree. He agrees they do combine because kachi kachim and kachim kalim, the iser for a tame person is considered to be a single restriction with a single name, and therefore the two categories do combine. And therefore everyone agrees, including Rabbi Shimon, that if you have a mixture where part of the iser is kachim kalim and part of the iser is kachi kachim, and each by themselves will be batal, they do combine to make the mixture forbidden for a tame person.